Hey everybody, how are you doing? I hope you're doing well. This is Ryan Singer. We're going to have an interview with Tom Paladino here in a second. We're going to talk about scalar energy. But I just want to say thank you. We're coming up on 7 years. 7 years will be this Sunday on January 31st, 2021. It'll be 7 year anniversary of the Mindcast. Thank you so much for everyone who's listened to, even if this is your first experience or episode. We call them experiences over here, and third year bonuses just in case you're new. And by we, I don't mean some weird cult. I just mean it's a branding thing potentially. Anyway, I also just want to, thank you so much for listening. There have been so many incredible guests, so many incredible insights and things, stories that have been shared with me over the years. I just can't thank you enough for being along for the ride. And also special shout out to the patrons, patreon.com/Ryan Singer, $1, $3 a month. Thank you for all your support for the last few years, for supporting me and supporting the Mindcast. If you want to support the Mindcast, jump on over there. I'm doing a giveaway. I'm sending a box of goodies to a winner to celebrate 7 years. So I'm sending over my Holographic Universe Michael Talbot book. I'm sending my The Power of Myth Joseph Campbell book, two of my favorite books. I'm sending them off. I've loved these books so much. I'm like, you know what? Time to start giving away things I love as opposed to just trying to downsize things I don't need anymore as I get ready to relocate myself. So I'm trying to give away things that I truly love that I think other people will also truly love, hopefully. So that's the point of that. So thank you to the patrons. And, maybe you were the lucky winner. I hope you were the lucky winner. And who knows? Everybody might just, be the lucky winner in the long run. I mean, because we're just all alive currently. So thank you again for 7 wonderful years. I'll stop being all mushy.
Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another experience of Me and Paranormal You. This is your buddy, Ryan Singer. We are at the end of January, headed into February for listening to this as it comes out. Excited today because talking to another warm weather lover, Tom Paladino. Thanks for joining me today, Tom.
It's a pleasure to be here. I give you my warm regards.
Yeah. And I send them right back to you. Now, we're going to talk about scalar energy. Tom, you, if I'm not mistaken here, and you can clarify for everybody, but an energy researcher using scalar energy to assist in healing and things of that nature. Is that about right?
That's one of the aspects. Yes. So we'll start with that. That's great.
Okay, cool. Yep. It's interesting because people who listen to this program, they know I just go on and on and on about, there's a shamanic Reiki healer I use and I love Reiki healing. My mom studied Reiki when I was a kid, and this is, back in the 80s in Southern Ohio. And I'm well aware of the benefits of energy healing when it comes to its effectiveness and that it's not so woo. A lot of people will think in the scientific community specifically, they think it's all quackery and woo and garbage and, but for people over here who have experience and are open-minded and just understand that there's so much we don't fully understand scientifically, we know that there's lots of opportunities out there for us to try to find balance in our bodies and in our energy and so on, right?
Thank you. That's the way I look at it. Scalar energy is an emerging science. And you have to become a student. You have to become a pupil. You don't know this. Trust me, you don't know this. It's all groundbreaking research. You can't read this from a college textbook. So it's a learning experience for most people, and I would welcome that. But there's a great deal of science behind this, and it is indeed valid.
What's the Before we get into like the nuts and bolts of it, I am curious. We were talking just briefly before we started recording, and you know, you're a New York kid growing up. You're no longer living down there. You're living where it's warm now. But I'm curious about the journey that Tom makes. Were you always interested in like the outside the box stuff, even as a kid?
Yes. Yeah, I am. I'm not the type that's going to eat a stale bologna sandwich. I always want to do something different in life. And scalar energy research is indeed different. And the reason I say that, it's not recognized by conventional science today. You have great men like Nikola Tesla, who discovered how to control, harness scalar energy. To this day, his discoveries, his inventions are still a mystery to people. Because it's an emerging science. We have so much to learn. You do have to think outside the box and consider this. Scalar energy is another dimension. It's not electricity or magnetism. So there's two energies. And very few people will realize or really be able to grasp the fact that there's something more than electromagnetic energy. There's a second dimension. That other dimension is scalar energy. And, you know, again, it's quite profound, but this is going to rewrite the physics books.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was just reading late last night. There's this book called The Death of Forever by, I think it's Daryl Rainey, who's passed on. And specifically, I was reading about, there's this one aspect of trying to understand time and time, space time. And when you're trying to explain a 3D aspect to people who are trapped in a 2D world, it becomes very difficult to see the 3D. And there's also this great book called Flatlands, which is like this really old science fiction book. And it's all about these different dimensions, right? And how difficult it is for one person in 2D to understand 3D and for 3D to understand 4D, et cetera, et cetera. And so this resonates with me right now. I mean, in a very synchronistic way, which makes sense that this is even part of the conversation. I didn't know Tesla was involved, and I love Tesla, and all the amazing and the magical things that came from that man's mind. I'm curious, when you're a kid and you're not looking for those stale bologna sandwiches. What kind of access did you have to, I guess, fresh foods, so to speak?
My mother was a wonderful cook. I wasn't expecting that question.
Well, I mean, like to follow along with the analogy, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I get it.
Yeah.
Why do I, maybe you can pick up the metaphor here. You know, you have to think outside the box. If you want a stale bologna sandwich in life, that's all you're going to get. So I'm the type that always thinks outside the box. And I believe in mysticism. And I believe that, there is God's guiding hand. But you cannot be fearful. You have to be intrepid. Well, as a child, I knew that Tesla was right. I read as much as I could about Nikola Tesla, and I was really thunderstruck with his ability and his insight. And I knew he wasn't working with electricity the latter part of his life. I mean, it was almost instinctual. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to follow this course of action because this man is really a genius. And he's always, if you will, pushing through the envelope, punching through the envelope. And that's the type of people I want to surround myself with. So I made it a career to think outside the box. And I don't follow the crowd. I don't want to follow the crowd. I like being a pioneer. I like being at the vanguard of a movement. Scalar energy is going to change the world. It's an emerging science, as I mentioned. I'm at the vanguard of that movement. And I would say it's a life that's been well lived. I'm proud of myself.
Well, that's. I mean, it is exciting to be on the emerging front of something, and the idea that, especially when there's actually benefit to it, as a that's outside of oneself. you know, there is a big difference between being at the, you know, the vanguard of, you know, a financial movement that could make an individual rich, as opposed to, you know, something that benefits other people in such, you know, a profound way. So you grow up, you go to school, you're kind of, you know, obsessed, very interested, thunderstruck by Tesla. Do you go to college or like what happens here?
I did. And I would highly recommend that if, even though you might consider yourself to be a forward-thinking scientist or researcher, you cannot replace a classical education. God bless every teacher from kindergarten to master classes to graduate school. God bless everybody that taught me. You need a classical education, and the greater amount of education you get underneath your belt, the better. I went to my collegiate career probably spanned 12, 13 years. I wasn't going to school full time, but after that, I decided I knew enough, and I had that groundwork of understanding that framework. And after that, probably at the age of 35, 36, I've been on my own independent study. So it's really a combination of academia that I cherish, and I give a lot of credit to the men and women of academia. But there comes a point in time that if you really want to do groundbreaking research, get ready, because there's not many people who are going to join you. We are the decided minority. And I could say that without equivocation in the scalar energy field and this emerging science. There's not many Tom Palladinos out there, because it takes a lot of work and it takes a lifelong commitment. And I will also add, there's no money in it. There's no money in it.
That's the thing that people...
It's an emerging science. It's going to take you years to learn this. You're going to have to suffer and sacrifice, and there's no money in it. And I can count the scalar energy researchers on both hands today, because it takes 20, 30 years perhaps to learn it. Very few people want to devote their life to that, and there's not a penny to be made.
Yeah, there's an interesting, I was just thinking about this. There's this interesting idea of like suffering for one's cause. And I think the time frame of people like, or people who like, oh, they struggled for so long. At least I know in arts, I mean, predominantly I've made my career as a stand-up comedian, and it's all about struggling. And in like when it comes to music and things like that. But the I think the time frame for people to consider like, oh, they struggled for so long has shrunk incredibly over the years. Like if someone goes like 4 years without recognition, or like they struggled for so long for 4 years, it's like, no, they're 25 years old. They didn't struggle.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
The idea of putting in the time and the effort for something that is to be a true believer, I suppose we can even use that kind of terminology. I think it fits here. For all kinds of things, you have to be a true believer in the thing that it is that you're called to, right? And and so that time and that energy is never wasted when it is
right,
when it is used in such a way.
Yeah. You're right. You know, I look at any what I would consider scientific exegetical study. If you really take something to exegesis, it's going to take years. Now, not a superficial understanding. To really understand a science, it'll take you 5, 10, 20 years. And that's the point of my life now. I'm 60 years of age. I would not change my history at all. I'm happy that I've pursued this course of action. But every year I learn something new. I had a fantastic discovery in my laboratory in the past few days, simply because I'm continuing to think outside the box and I'm continuing to learn. It's never ending, but you have to challenge yourself. You always have to try. So at age 60, I had aha moment in my laboratory, and I'll elucidate on that. But the point is, you really have to want to do this. This has to be part of your fabric. No, otherwise, why would you study 11 hours a day? That doesn't make sense to me. You won't. and you won't.
Yeah, I think that's the simple answer, right? You just won't. I mean, you might do it for like 4 days and then be like, yeah, I don't think this is for me. I'm going to go back to binging some HBO Max. The interesting component here too that can be examined is the need for knowledge, the quest for discovery, and then you pair that with the desire to help, right? Which I think so much of science, it can be overlooked, that so much of the quest for scientific discovery is trying to elucidate and trying to help humanity in some way, whether it's to better understand us or the world we live in, or to be able to better help, heal, cure, feed, grow, et cetera, right?
Yeah, thank you. And I like that. And, you know, apparently you're a comedian and you see how long it's taken you in life to understand that timing is so important and you have to connect with your audience. And, you know, that's the art of comedy that I don't necessarily have. So whatever your proclivity in life, you know, I admire anybody who can stick to a discipline or an art, call it what you will, and to find your calling in life. And to me, that's a godsend.
Yeah. And I'm curious, when it comes to like, I mean, you speak of the laboratory and maybe we can get into that a little bit later too, but maybe you can describe the first aha moment when it came to scalar energy and you're like, oh, okay, I can start doing this and with this, I can help people, right? And what does that all mean?
In theory, I would say it was perhaps at the age of 11, 12, 13, when I was really able to grasp what Nikola Tesla was doing. And I read about his discoveries and I read about what he could accomplish. And I said to myself, that's not the stream of electrons. He's not working with AC electricity anymore, because he was speaking about anti-gravity and illuminating the world. He was speaking about being able to work in synchronicity with an instrument so that the instrument could work in sync with your brain waves, so to speak, to pick up your consciousness. And I said to myself, that's not electricity. So Tesla, in my estimation, was the first man ever to harness scalar energy. Again, scalar energy is not electricity. Why do I like scalar energy? It can do so much more than that of electricity. Electricity really is an inferior type of energy. It's once we understand, you could compare the two side by side vis-a-vis, and electricity cannot hold a candle to scalar energy. So as an adolescent, I studied Tesla. I knew he was on to something. Tesla spoke about illuminating the world or providing power to the world by way of wireless transmission. So if you look at the electrical grid today, it's a wire transmission. Why was Tesla alluding to a wireless transmission? Because scalar energy does not fall off over distance, over time. So if he was simply concentrating on electricity, electricity does experience entropy. But with his towers, he built scalar energy towers, that was wireless transmission. Obviously, there were no wires attached to his towers. And the transmission of energy was energy that would not experience entropy or loss of signal. Now, let's say you have a radio station. Well, that radio station can only send a signal for a certain distance. Tesla was speaking about his scalar energy towers illuminating the entire world. So obviously, he was not worried about time and distance. And yeah. If you look at his towers, there's no electrical wires. There's no grid system around them. He built a scalar energy tower in Colorado Springs. And at, you know, an elevation of 6,000 feet out in the middle of a pasture, you're asking yourself, why would he build a tower in the Rocky Mountains back in 1899 when that town was barely entering into the electrical age? He built a scalar energy tower in the Rocky Mountains. He experimented in the Rocky Mountains at the safety, if you will, of a remote location. And if you look at those photographs of the tower in Colorado Spring, there's no electrical grid. There's no telephone wires. There's no electrical wires. He was wireless at that time. So why would you build an electrical tower in Colorado Springs? He did. He built a scalar energy tower in Colorado Springs because he knew that he did not have to rely upon the electrical grid.
That's really cool. Is it Tesla that gave Scalar its name?
Where does Tesla Scalar called it from? Radiant energy. The reason I call it Scalar today, that's the term accepted in academia, and that's accepted by the Western thought. If I was living in Asia, I might call it Qi or Prana. So synonymous terms are Qi, Prana, zero point energy. Some people call it Tesla energy today, or some people will call it even pyramid energy. But suffice to say, there's two energies, electromagnetic and the other energy. And the other energy, I call it scalar energy.
That's cool. I'm curious about the tower too, because I'm trying to, and like you said, you have to open your mind to this, I think, and you have to have a new way of thinking. So when it comes to the energy tower, I'm on board with the wireless aspect, right? I'm curious about what is this tower even doing? And where is scalar energy? And because if it's all around us, I'm guessing. So especially if we're, the chi and prana, it's like life force. It's like this energy, this hidden, the ultimate energy. What is this tower doing? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah. In reference to Tesla's tower back in 1899, his tower was for experimentation. Tesla, prior to that, was living in New York City. Now, you have to put all this in context. Tesla had a very nice urbane lifestyle in New York City, and he had all the creature comforts, if you will, in the cosmopolitan surrounding of New York City. Why would he be induced to travel out to Colorado Springs, build a tower from scratch in the Rocky Mountains? He did so that he could experiment. And he needed to be at that elevation because he really wanted to connect, if you will, to the ambient scalar energy at that altitude. And many times it was said during his experiments in Colorado Springs, he was producing lightning bolts of 20, 30, 40 feet in length. Well, you obviously don't want to produce lightning bolts in downtown New York City. So for the sake of experimentation, what a mind he was. For the sake of an experimentation, I would likewise move to Colorado Springs if I was going to be experimenting with man-made lightning bolts. after he had learned from his experience in Colorado Springs, he went back and he built a tower in a scalar tower in Long Island, New York. So in 1899, that was the year of experimentation in Colorado Springs. After that, after the turn of the century, he had some funding and he started to build a scalar energy tower in Long Island, New York, but the funding was cut short and Tesla could never realize his dream.
Yeah, and there's so many murky details surrounding, the death of Tesla and his writings, all of his workings, and who got them. And I don't even remember if there was some strange fire or something, but because wasn't he in a hotel at the end of his death? I mean, do you know?
He spent most of his life in a hotel, and he was just consumed with his work. And the day he died, his notes were confiscated by the United States government. They've never been released to the public. All of his inventions were confiscated. So he was obviously a threat to not only the United States government, but to perhaps the elite. You want to call them maybe the Illuminati or the One World Order, call it what you will, because technology upsets the apple cart. You realize that, right? So Tesla's technology was about to upset the military-industrial complex.
For sure, and we're seeing that unfold currently, like in real time right now, with the app Robinhood, which is a stock market app, and and Robinhood empowered what they call retail traders in the stock market, and all these hedge funders wanted to short GameStop, this place that just all these retail stores that sell video games, and all these retail vendors, these people, just normal people, said, no, we're not gonna let that happen. And then they froze it. It's chaos out there right now, but it's powering the people, empowering the people, right? And so when it comes to powering the people, it's almost the same way as empowering the people, right? And so if we're talking about scalar energy in that way, it is really powering people, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And that's really the scope of my research. If everybody can benefit from this invention, then so be it. I disdain any type of invention that's just meant for the elite or just to enrich people. And I'm sure God will continue to bless me if I continue to share God's largesse. It's not my blessing, it's God's blessing. And Tesla was obviously of the same mentality. So I believe Tesla was blessed. I believe I'm blessed because our heart is in the right place. I don't think God is going to give somebody who's nefarious this insight, because you're really controlling nature with scalar energy. And I don't think God is going to entrust that wisdom to just anybody, to be quite frank about the matter.
So what are we doing with... I guess the insight that comes from this, it is, or I guess a better question that's a little more specific would be, when it comes to the insight that you're getting about scalar energy, you know, what is it? And like, you know, can we give some definition to that?
It's sunlight, it's starlight. Scalar energy is the first, the initial, the primary energy of the universe. All stars are powered by scalar energy, scalar light. What do I mean that? Electricity is not the fundament of the universe. The fundamental energy, the initial energy of the universe, is scalar energy. This is why the stars never burn out. If you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, and a lot of people try to interface the electromagnetic spectrum as being the power source of stars, it doesn't work. The model falls apart. The scientific model never works with electricity and magnetism as powering the stars. It can't, it doesn't work. The stars are powered by an infinite supply of energy. It's scalar energy, it's God's energy. So if you went to the very center of a star, you would only find scalar energy. There are no thermonuclear explosions at the center of a star. That's pseudoscience, that's false science. And what Tesla discovered, what I've discovered, but a few other researchers have discovered, when you look at the math and when you look at the environment of the center of a star, that math, that environment is a scalar energy environment. It has nothing to do with thermonuclear explosions or reactions. It's not a release of electricity. It's not a flow of a stream of photons. It's massless energy. It's pure light. So at the center of every star in the universe, you will only find, exclusively find, scalar energy. It's not electrical. So if you look at the universe, the light source, the source of all energy, initiates a scalar energy. Now, scalar energy then will degrade into electricity and magnetism. And this is what a lot of people don't quite think. You know, you can't compare the apple to the orange. So you're looking at one energy at a time. And at the very quintessence of a star, it's scalar energy exclusively.
Okay. And so then, like, over, let's say, the lifespan of a star, right? When it comes to, what does it end with? A supernova or when stars implode upon themselves? And what is happening to scalar energy at that point?
Sure. It still exists. Now, there are variations in stars, and there has to be. It's not static, it's dynamic. But even a supernova is still a scalar energy phenomenon. Even a black hole is still scalar energy. It's an infolding, if you will, of light, but that light is eternal. This is why a lot of black holes, I don't agree with that a black hole ceases to exist. I believe a black hole will have still that eternal energy, scalar energy. And a black hole might have a life cycle to it. But if you look at scalar energy, look at all the stars, look at all the supernovas, as well as the black holes. If all of those celestial bodies are being powered by scalar energy, they are eternal. They will never die. They'll go through variations. They have a life cycle. But a black hole, a pulsar, a star, they are eternal because scalar energy is eternal.
So it's kind of like the, you know, cannot be destroyed. It just changes form.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes. Many astrophysicists will say, well, we've observed a quasar and there's an anomaly we don't understand. And it's just, we don't quite understand the physics. And it's a shame because those astrophysicists are much smarter than that. They don't give themselves enough credit. And I'm going to explain it. There's two energies. Stop trying to explain a quasar by electromagnetic theory. It's not electricity. There's two dimensions. So every quasar is a scalar energy celestial being. It's a scalar energy celestial body. So stop trying to equate the apple to the orange. One's an apple, one's an orange. It's so simple, but
it's like trying to measure, the volume of someone's voice using a ruler.
Yeah.
Or, using the wrong tool to try to understand something, right? Am I getting that kind of right?
Yeah, you're right. Tesla used to stare at the sun, and I think by his mysticism, he could understand that the sun was not electricity. He often referred to the sun as some type of eternal source. And that's what he really wanted to tap into. So his scalar energy towers were miniature stars. They're miniature suns. That's what's so fascinating about Tesla. To this day, he's a mystery. I mean, there's some experts who've studied Tesla, but they only had that tunnel vision that he was working with electricity. The tower in Wardenclyffe was a star, a miniature star. And if you look at Wardenclyffe, it was out in Long Island. At the turn of the century, there was no power station. There were no electrical lines from that tower. It was wireless transmission of energy. Well, as you know, electricity dies off, if you will. It experiences entropy. Now, how could Tesla from a tower in Long Island illuminate power the world from at that time was a remote island out of New York City? He wasn't using electricity. If he was using scalar, he could have built his scalar tower in the Himalayan mountains, and he could have powered the world from the Himalayan mountains.
So I guess it's about understanding what it is, and then taking that further into understanding how to utilize or direct. I mean, control sounds like the wrong word, but to harness and utilize this energy, right?
That's it. So imagine what I'm saying. I have in my laboratory miniature stars. I have Tesla instruments, and I'm not tapping into the electromagnetic grid. I'm tapping into star energy. It's a different dimension. And what I've discovered with scalar energy, it provides one consummate control over nature. Scalar energy is the actual instructions for all of nature. So if you control scalar energy, you control nature. Control scalar energy, you have mastery over nature.
Okay. I mean, I bet some people's ears perked up just now. There's this TV show on HBO called Lovecraft Country, and it's just really phenomenal. But, and like so many different things in life, one of the core elements of it was man's attempt to master nature, right? And harness all of the incredible limitless power that lies there within. Yeah. So the idea that scalar energy is this force, is this thing that, powers all that is, right? And I guess, is the undercurrent of all that is. The idea that you have these devices in your lab is really, it's like, it's Okay, yeah, man. Like, how do I get to this lab, right? So people might be wondering, what are you doing with these things?
We've started with the healing ministry, and I'm going to show you just how esoteric this thought is. I work with people remotely in my lab by way of a photograph. Your photograph carries your scalar energy signature. So I actually take a photograph and I place the photograph in the instrument. And then the instrument can make a connection with your scalar energy body or your scalar energy presence. So I work with people remotely around the world, and I do it by way of their photograph. You don't come to me, scalar goes to you. Why? Because scalar transcends time and space. So I place your photograph inside my miniature star, and then I send you star energy by way of your photograph.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, it's, to me, it rings of the, you know, what people must have first thought when the telephone first happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can I hear you?
Yeah.
You're not when next to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how is your voice traveling through? Like, how am I connected to you right now? And then, you know, you can extrapolate that out to, you know, like we're having a Zoom, a video Zoom conference right now. And as close as what we can tell is real time. And so I'm all about distance and, you know, distance being an illusion, and the connection between all things being so much more immediate than even we realize. Does scalar energy play into that as well?
Yeah. Let me just put a context on this. I'm working with a different paradigm. It's not electromagnetic energy. So when I'm working in this scalar energy dimension, I do transcend time and space. Meaning what? In a electromagnetic environment, you have a progression of time. Whereas in scalar energy, everything is one moment in time. There is no time in scalar energy. So when I'm working in my laboratory and I have your photograph, I can capture you in the present moment, regardless of what age your photograph was taken. You might give to me a photograph that's 10 years old. I can treat your photograph in the present moment, even though your photograph is 10 years old. So what am I getting at? It really is just a different mindset. It opens up a new branch of physics. It opens up a new vocabulary, a new way of looking at reality. And I'm saying to the audience, there are two realities. There's an electromagnetic reality and a scalar energy reality. If I had my druthers, the entire world, the entire universe would be in a scalar energy reality, because it's much preferred. It's the dimension of perfection.
And what does that look like? For people who are curious, like when you say, you know, if you had your druthers, like what does that world look like?
It's a world in which you have perfect communication, perfect coherence, peace, order. I'll give you, for instance, why do we suffer from disease or death? Why do we have these bodily aches and pains? Because we live in an electromagnetic environment, which is disordered. If we could live immersed in a scalar energy force field, that's perfect communication, that's perfect instructions, that's eternal life. Remember, scalar energy does not degrade. So if you're in a scalar energy environment, your body will not degrade. You'll live forever.
Okay, so I mean, for all the people out there seeking physical immortality, this is right in their wheelhouse, right?
Yes, it is. This is it. Yeah.
Now, because I mean, I guess I'm inclined anyway to just kind of be there in the space that believes, when it comes to consciousness, our true identity of who we are. That's in the scale. That's got to be, you know, for framing it under these discussion and in these terms, it's already in the scalar energy. It's already operating under that, because I do believe that's in the immortal side of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you an interesting story. There's a man by the name of Grebennikov, and he was working with scalar energy in an anti-gravity capacity. And he developed scalar energy anti-gravity instruments, and he could fly around in these anti-gravity instruments. And he noticed that every time he was in this anti-gravity instrument flying around, that time either stood still or time slowed down. And he would go aloft in this anti-gravity machine maybe for an hour or two. And when he came back and landed this anti-gravity instrument on the ground, he saw that his wristwatch had lost time, if you will. So the wristwatch did not advance when he was in the anti-gravity force field. Meaning what? When he was in this anti-gravity scalar energy force field, time either stood still or time slowed down. There was always a discrepancy between his wristwatch that he wore with him during his experimentation and the real Earth time. And he concluded that when he was in this environment, this local environment of scalar energy with his anti-gravity instrument, time slowed down or time stood still. And I concur with that. And this has been observed in other types of scalar energy environment. So if you're in a perfect scalar energy environment, time does not exist. If time does not exist, you will not age. You will become immortal.
Wow, that's fascinating. I've been trying to do my best to wrap my brain around like some of the quantum physics aspects of space-time and, you know, the reference frame of experiencing time. And I understand that the measurement of time is totally man-made. Yes. So it's arbitrary in that way and imaginary. And the one thing that I see that certain scientists will say, it doesn't matter what environment you are in as far as like the experience of time and whether short, fast, or whatever, it's that the heart still beats, right? So regardless of if you're close to like a black hole where the speed of light and the gravity means that if you came back, everyone you've known and loved is now long dead, even though you've only aged, you know, a month, yes, right? Your heart still beats, right? And so meaning that you still will be progressing, your physical form will still be progressing, right? Yeah. So, but correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying here is in this scalar, in this perfect scalar environment, if time stands still, your heart still beats, yes, but yeah, you don't physically age?
I believe so. I think that's accurate. Okay. Because when this man, Grebennikov, was experimenting with this scalar energy force field, he obviously he had biochemical reactions. But what he observed was that he never felt gravity, the influence of gravity in this cocoon, in this environment, this anti-gravity environment. Many times he became invisible. He was indeed outside of time, or time slowed down for him. And he always felt energized in this scalar energy environment. So it's a different environment. It's a different physics book. It will require a new organic understanding of this new and emerging science. You cannot compare the apple to the orange. It just doesn't
This
work.
Is so cool because, and I think this ties in. We're going to find out here in a second, but I've been having a lot of conversations with friends of mine in the world of paranormal and, you know, the esoteric, the mystical, supernatural, about what I believe is a hindrance of the paranormal communities seeking out in almost desperate ways the affirmation of the scientific community in an effort to gain some kind of mainstream credibility.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, right. And so I'm like, a new set of rules needs to be established, right? We need to set up our own standards. And then another friend of mine, who I've talked to a couple times, who has, you know, is in conversations with an entity, said that, you know, the answer I'm looking for, this new system that I want, is something that's old. And it's like it's there already, and it's been there for a long time. So what you're saying is you're describing scalar energy, which was, you know, expounded upon and experimented with by Nikola Tesla, one of my all-time favorite people, a while ago, right? And you're talking about new rules and new standards. And I can't help but think, that it's, you know, synchronistic in some way, that the new rules are old rules, are older than the rules that we think are already old anyway. So
I agree with you. Don't try and change the old guard. If they're not open to learning, I don't care what your position in life. If you say no to learning, you said no to opportunity. Okay. And if the old guard only wants to look at the electromagnetic paradigm, then so be it. You know, maybe it's just too much for them to consider that there's two energy spectrums. I don't know. And this is one of the reasons why I've divorced myself from academia. Now, a lot of people say, well, will you present your work at a university? Not necessarily. No university has ever welcomed me. If anything, they've shunned me. So I don't chase the old guard. You know, good for them. That's their lifestyle. You have to be a trailblazer and get ready to be alone or have few friends.
Yeah, you can't be.
I'm alone. I'm alone. Like I said, there's not many people like Tom, and I am shunned by academia, and it doesn't bother me because, you know, I don't want to put up with that politics anyway. I had incredible discoveries in my laboratory in the past week. Now, if I would have had to go through a board of directors on a Wall Street or Madison Avenue, or I would have had to sat down with the board at a university and made my proposal, I can guarantee you I would not have been able to make the progress that I have in the past week. And that's just the way it goes. So get ready to be alone. You are the trailblazer. Don't look behind, because there's very few people following you.
There's real truth to what you're saying, and the whole system is set up to support this as well. When it comes to the shunning of new ideas, the whole system is insulated in such a way by the ideals of, you know, the frame of mind that has the seat of power. Whether it's like the media working in concert with academia, et cetera, et cetera. So, and we know that. And so, but yet we persist anyway. So I'm curious if we can.
That's the stale bologna sandwich that I started my talk out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's totally stale.
You might think that's an abrupt statement on my part. Maybe it is, but it's accurate. You really have to be a trailblazer to make progress today. You know, otherwise you're just paper shuffling, and you're wasting your time. You're wasting your effort.
Yeah. George Carlin has a great quote about, you know, how do you make your voice stand out above the din? Right. And to do that, you have to be very unique, and you have to be willing to take chances, and you have to be able to quote unquote risk, profile or credibility, etc., when it comes to the acceptance in the mainstream. And I think that's anybody who's out on the fringes and, you know, and doing the work that really is exciting and exhilarating to them, trying to discover new things, they're looking at everybody else on the inside, and we're thinking to ourselves, why are you still stuck in there, man? It's so boring. Bologna was never even good when it was fresh, let alone stale, right? Come over here and have a delicious sandwich. I'm curious about this new discovery you're talking about in your lab. Do you want to elucidate us on that, like you said earlier?
Sure. Well, over the years, I've been working with photographs. I take a photograph of a germ, a photograph of a virus and a bacterium, and I actually physically place that photograph inside my instrument. And then the instrument will look at one photograph at a time and destroy that virus or bacterium found on the photograph. So remember, everything I'm doing is light, it's non-physical. So photographs of a germ, photographs of a virus, a bacterium, a fungus, serves to provide the informational input to destroy that virus, bacterium, fungus, respectively. Well, instead of using one photograph at a time, over the years, I've been able to coalesce and use maybe 1,000 or 2,000 photographs at a time. And now recently, through my experimentation, I'm taking photographs of the photographs. So I can photograph a million germs, if you will. on one piece of paper. And that one piece of paper now can serve to destroy a million species of germs.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like herd immunization.
Yeah. Well, that's topical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious if, like, when it comes to, is there intention that needs to be set, or because you're saying that scalar energy is like, is the instruction, and it already is kind of has this perfection inherent inside of it that it, that's not even needed. It'll just return things to like the way they're supposed to be.
It's inherent. It is intrinsic with the energy. The energy really is the mind of God. If you can look at this energy, not just as fire and heat, a lot of people say, well, it gives off a lot of output of heat or sparks. You know, that's what a lot of people have the connotation with energy. Energy really is intelligence, especially when you're considering scalar energy. So it's infinite intelligence. Really, it's the mind of God. So when I'm working in my laboratory, I'm able, and I tell people this, I'm able to destroy anywhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 species of different viruses, bacteria, fungi, prions, etc. And I've been able to prove that, but now I'm just able to further, leverage this instrument and leverage my ability and simply to do that in a shorter period of time. So again, there's no limit to this. The only limit is our lack of imagination. So that's one of my discoveries in the past week. I'm elated because, for instance, I'm working with a tree in Hawaii, the Ohia tree, O-H-I-A, the Ohia tree. It has a blight. It has a fungal infection. And what I've done, I've taken satellite photographs of the Hawaiian islands, and I'm able to treat millions of Ohia trees within a split second. So within a split second, I can eradicate this fungus from the ceratosis. I'm able to eradicate this plant fungus from the Ohia tree. And it, again, working in a scalar energy paradigm, everything is in the present moment. And this plant fungus, ceratocystis, is eradicated in a split second. All because I'm thinking outside the box. I'm not working with one tree at a time. I'm working with millions of trees in Hawaii, and I'm able to reverse the tree blight.
Oh, wow. And one of my favorite musicians of all time used to go by the name Songs Ohia. And Jason Molina was his name. Unfortunately, he passed away way too young, but so that's really cool. I love, I didn't know that Ohia was a tree this whole time. That's really cool. I'm curious when it comes to, like, you're talking about the intelligence of energy, right? And to me, that makes sense. And like, and even in the sense of, sometimes I know I use this phrase a lot when I feel like I've got ideas that are really coming to me. It's like, I feel like I'm heating up, you know, I'm really cooking. And so I think that the correlation between like talking about heat and then talking about thought, at least in a positive way and a growing way and a creation kind of way, that has been there for a long, long time, and probably by no accident necessarily, but maybe it's a happy accident. But so when it comes to the intelligence of this energy, and that doesn't mean that there is motive necessarily, right? Or morality.
I believe this is really a divine energy. I mean, who could, first of all, create an infinite number of stars and power an infinite number of stars? You'd have to be an infinite being. So in order to create an infinite universe, you need an infinite energy. And that forwards my point, and that lends itself to the argument. What type of universe do we have? Is it finite or infinite? It has to be infinite, because scalar energy exists, and scalar energy does not know any boundary. It's all encompassing. Scalar energy is omnipresent. See, once you're in a scalar energy force field, you're everywhere. There is no dying off of scalar energy. In other words, it fills the universe in an instant, and it if it doesn't die off, and if it doesn't trail off, and if it doesn't degrade, then it's everywhere instantaneously. And hence, in order to have scalar energy, you have to have a scalar energy universe, which is an omnipresent universe. If you have an omnipresent energy, you have to have an omnipresent universe. So the two go hand in hand. So for those of you who've ever postured, the universe is infinite because scalar energy is infinite.
I mean, it makes sense when you think of it. I mean, to me, in that way. It's like, how can you... That's like that great, it's that great old debate. It reminds me of the theological debate of like, how can an all-knowing, all-powerful, all-loving God create a world in which there's evil? And it's like this great mind exercise, right?
Yeah.
So one might ask, how could an all-sacral or scalar, intelligence create a non- scalar universe? And maybe it comes to the idea of, well, what are we willing to see? What reality are we choosing to live in, right?
There's two realities. There's a scalar reality and an electromagnetic reality, and both are real. But again, if I had my druthers, the entire universe would be a scalar energy environment.
I'm trying to stop using words like maybe and if. We'll have to get there.
Yes, we will.
We'll just have to get there. And
all right, good for you.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to get there?
Yeah.
Why would we not want to get there? There's no reason to not get there. Tom, this has been fun. I've been really enjoying this. I'm curious when it comes to, I'm going to ask this question because I think, I don't know, people might be thinking it, but if not, I'm thinking it, and it's a fun question to ask. When it comes to scalar energy, let's say you afford yourself from time to time, a luxury or I could use a little something. Have you used scalar energy ever or like for yourself?
Yes, on a daily basis. I'm working with scalar energy, and I perform for myself and my clients what's known as a pathogenic cleanse, meaning on a daily basis, I can eradicate at least 400,000, 500,000 different species of pathogens in my body. Well, what does that mean? Well, in practice, it means I'm germ-free on a daily basis. Imagine that. I call it the pathogenic cleanse. These instruments will send information into my body, will break apart the germs in my body. Well, how do we do that? We negate the molecular bonds of viruses and bacteria and fungi. So in practice, I perform a pathogenic cleanse on myself and people who support us, who people who patronize us. We call that the scalar energy pathogenic cleanse. So that is one of the functions of scalar energy, to be able to work with people around the world to perform a pathogenic cleanse. And you don't have to leave your home. You simply supply us with your photograph, because your photograph allows us access on that energetic level.
That's pretty cool. Do you want to leave people with, I guess, any kind of final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I don't want this to seem too esoteric, and I don't want this to seem out of everybody's reach. Now, everybody in the world controls scalar energy. Why? Because your heart and your mind are scalar energy organs. Your heart and your mind are incredible scalar energy masterpieces, and your heart and your mind far exceed any scalar energy instrument in my laboratory. The human heart, the human mind are powered by scalar energy, are governed by scalar energy. The human heart, the human mind far exceed any custom-built scalar energy instrument that I could ever create. So what's my point? Be loving, be kind, use your heart, use your mind for good.
I love that. Use your heart, use your mind, be loving, be kind. Use it for good. I love that. Well, you can go to scalarlight.com. That's the website, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You can find a ton of information about Tom and all the links and the good things there. Yeah, and this has been fun. And, if there's ever some more like great breakthroughs, which I'm sure there will be, I hope you reach out to me and we'll have to, continue the chat at some point in the future. And if I'm down in Florida, you bet I'm going to be trying to come see this laboratory that you're talking about.
I look forward to that, Ryan.
Cool. Well, Tom, yeah, this has been fun. And, so check out scalarlight.com and we'll do it again sometime. Thanks again, Tom.
Thank you, Ryan.